Life comes with a lot of decisions, and it can be hard to know the right path sometimes. A therapist can help you map out what you really want, so you trust yourself to make great choices and feel excited about the future. BetterHelp offers convenient, professional online therapy on your schedule, however you want it, by phone, chat, or video call. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/positive today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/positive.
I would suit up in my uniform, and you're going out on patrol. What are we going to do tonight? Well, we're going to rob some drug dealers, and I know how to do it really well.
Listen to and follow The Set, an Odyssey Originals documentary podcast series, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your shows.
I'm not a bad guy, man, but I loved being that dirty.
How was your weekend? I hope you did some summertime things. There are large swaths of the Atlantic coast, the Northeast, getting pounded by rain. I know that I pay more attention to the weather in my area, obviously. And it's summertime, so the temperatures are climbing in various places. I was in touch with my uncle in Arizona this weekend, and he was talking about 115 routinely. Now it's their hot season, and he's thankful they have a pool in their backyard. It was great to visit them back in April. But yes, now they're in the pool every day. After work, he said every single day he's in the pool. And I'm sure that would be the case for my mom, too, in Houston, if she could get in the water. But she can't yet because she's coming off the foot surgery. Oh, my gosh. She and her husband, they are so funny. He's taking such good care of her. I'm really proud of him. But because my mom needs to be close to, well, she wants to be close enough to the bathroom where she doesn't have to walk a ways to get there. And also, their bed is a higher profile bed, which makes it harder to get into. So they're not sleeping in their master bedroom. In fact, their master bedroom has been empty now for about 3 weeks. Instead, they're in the front wing of the house, which is where I normally sleep when I go visit my mom, and where I will be sleeping in a few weeks when I'm back in Houston. She's in the, so the way they have it, the end of the wing, two small bedrooms and a bathroom in the middle. And so she's sleeping in the front bedroom of the house in the queen bed, where she's got her feet up all the time because she's still supposed to be keeping her foot elevated. The swelling is still a challenge. She can't wear the boot all the time yet because of the swelling. So she's sleeping in the front bedroom, foot's up. Her husband is sleeping in a twin bed in the other bedroom on the other side of the bathroom. So he can help her when she needs to get up in the middle of the night. She can probably hobble around now. She does have a wheelchair and there are crutches, but until she can put the boot on full time, he's not confident that she's stable, but she also doesn't feel real comfortable trying to get around by herself. So poor Mike has to get up every time my mom wakes up, and I would think this would be the case. He's a really heavy sleeper. She has to try to wake him up every time she needs to get up, which is maybe one or two times per night. So I feel badly for Mike, but he's crushing this nursemaid thing where he's making breakfast and he's warming up their food. Now, I think he's getting some of those ready-made meals as opposed to cooking, or he's going out to get food. And he's essentially at my mom's beck and call whenever she needs it. He's been working from home now for 3 weeks, which he can do, but generally does go into the office several times per weekend, isn't right now. And the dogs, they're very confused. They have no idea why they're sleeping in the front bedrooms. And so it's kind of funny. The dogs are now sleeping in the hallway between the two bedrooms because that way they're halfway between my mom and Mike. So it's a whole major production with them right now. But I give Mike all kinds of credit because he's taking care of her. He's not complaining. My mom says he's had a great attitude. And clearly he's sleeping just fine because she said she can still hear him snoring even in the other bedroom.
Twin bed.
Yeah, poor guy's in a twin bed. Actually, I'll be sleeping in the twin bed in a couple of weeks. Well, there's two in that room, but It's be generally where my nieces would sleep, but I will be doing that in a couple of weeks because my best friend is also flying to Houston to visit. She hasn't seen my mom since high school, and she's coming over for the first part of the visit. So we'll swim and we'll do some shopping and hang out with mom. And I promised mom, now we're flying in on a Thursday evening, and so they won't have to worry about dinner. Bob's picking us up at the airport. But then on Friday, after we do our fun and our games and our shopping, I told mom that I would make sure to do dinner, right? So I've got a recipe I'm going to try and make the dinner for everyone for Friday evening. So, and that would include Bob, of course. So she doesn't have to worry about dinner and Mike doesn't have to get some ready-made meal from the local grocery store, the HEB. So I'll be cooking for the fam and the best friend coming up in a couple of weeks. Looking forward to that Friday night. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Lots of summer plans. I do always enjoy filling up at least my Fridays and Saturdays during the summertime and taking advantage of what is a more limited hot weather stretch. And I'm okay with that. Given the choice, if I needed to pick between the extreme cold or the extreme heat for the rest of my life, I would pick the extreme cold. I sleep better in the cold. Penny and I, we breathe better in the cold. I don't mind the cold at all. Now, do I need it to be extreme for the rest of my life? No, I'm glad it's not. But I do love the four seasons, but I would pick the cold over the heat any day. However, there are some summertime activities that I love, and this weekend was a good example. And the weekend's coming up a good example. My college roommate will be visiting me next weekend, and we've got a couple of great activities planned, including going up to the crown of the Statue of Liberty for the first time ever. I've never been up there. She's never been up there. Tickets sell out months in advance. It's really difficult to get them. I've tried in the past and have had no luck. So Colleen, my college roommate, is coming down from Maine, and she and I are doing the crown trek. So you have to climb hundreds of stairs to get up to the crown. And apparently it's a very narrow staircase that gets up to the crown, as you could imagine. So they warn you that if you're claustrophobic or you're someone who is maybe not in shape enough to be able to make that trip, you better be careful, be warned, because there's no way to get up or down unless you climb the stairs. So we are looking forward to that. We'll be on the ferry to get over to the Statue of Liberty, which I always love. And I'm also taking her up to the top of the Freedom Tower, which is now part of the 9/11 Memorial and in Lower Manhattan, an incredible scene. So we're praying for clear weather so that she can see some of the views and the sights from the top of the Freedom Tower. So that's coming up this weekend. We'll probably do a movie night and cook and blah, blah, blah. But this past weekend was a unique weekend for a couple of reasons. First of all, the crazy heat. So a lot of places dealing with some extreme heat and then thunderstorms and always navigating that. And I did enjoy my weekend, so I don't want you to think that I did not. But the goal of this weekend was to engage in activities that would give me joy, but also would be a nod or a tribute to my grandmother. My Grammy Helen passed away exactly a year ago Saturday. I cannot believe it's been a year for a lot of reasons. The time has gone quickly, which I think it generally does feel as though time passes by in a blur, at least at this stage in my life. But I also can't believe it's been over a year since I've heard her voice. Thankfully, I can still hear her in my head. I can still hear that joy and that laughter when I would call her and she would pick up the phone, realize it was me, and say, "Amy." She didn't have caller ID, so she didn't know who it was calling her whenever I would. And I didn't text her ahead of time to let her know I was calling. She didn't have a cell phone, so it was always her landline. In fact, that's why I kept a landline for years and years and still have one now, because she couldn't hear me as well on a cell phone. I think her hearing aids created interference with the cell phone, but you know, sometimes cells can be spotty reception. So I kept a landline and would call on her landline. Or at 98 years old, Grammy Helen learned how to Skype. So we would do video calls routinely from the middle of the pandemic probably until I was able to visit her. But even after that, it's been over a year since I've seen her face or since I have been able to hear her voice, but I can still hear it in my brain. On her 100th birthday, we did a party for her, and I had taken my computer all the way to Wisconsin because Grammy, well, she didn't have her own computer, but also she wasn't going to be able to see all of her kids together because my auntie Karen did not make the trip for her birthday. The three sons made the trip, but my auntie Karen couldn't be there. She was dealing with some health challenges. So I really wanted them to be able to see and talk to Auntie Karen. So I took my laptop all the way to my grandmother's 100th birthday party and put them all on, I don't think it was Skype, it was some other form of video call. And it was so amazing to see and hear the joy in my grandmother's face as each of the sons took turns sitting next to her talking to their sister, and my auntie Karen being able to talk to each of them and see each of them, plus the face-to-face time with Grammy Helen. And Grammy was so joyful, and she was so happy, and she was so lively for her 100th birthday festivities until 2 or 3 days later, and then she was exhausted, as you can imagine, at 100. But I remember recording her conversations, telling a story on video call with my auntie and then her three sons, my father and her other two sons. And I had that recording on my phone last spring. And then I had a phone death in the fall, late summer, early fall. No joke. The phone just died one day. And even the texts at the store could never get it to turn on again. So unfortunately, I hadn't yet downloaded everything off of my phone. I hadn't done the photo dump since my trip to Wisconsin, which now I routinely do because I don't want to lose those photos or videos or anything else. But I learned my lesson. I couldn't retrieve that recording. And I was really sad about the fact that I lost her voice in that latest recording from when she was 100. Now, again, I can remember what she sounds like, and I cherished all of our phone calls a couple times a month at least, if not every other week to 10 days, and I do miss talking to her. And so this past weekend, I knew I needed to engage in some activities that would give me joy, even as I was missing her and reflecting, and I'm working on a letter to her that will be my next blog post. I've been thinking about it for a couple of weeks now, what I'd say to her if I could. And that's really the precipitous behind the letter to her. If I could have one more conversation with her right now, it wouldn't be enough. But what would I tell my Grammy Helen if I could talk to her right now for, say, an hour, or if I could Skype with her for an hour, which is usually how long our calls went on video? The women at her assisted living facility would drop the computer off and then not come back and get it. Even though the calls were only supposed to last 15 to 20 minutes, they loved my Grammy, and they knew how much my Grammy enjoyed being on Skype with me. And so they just would leave the call. They would just leave the computer there and let Grammy talk. Now, Grammy didn't know how to hang up, which was even funnier. So I had to keep talking until they came back to get the computer because Grammy didn't know how to hang up. And I couldn't just hang up on her. That would be weird. So instead, I just kept talking. And there were times, no joke, where we'd run out of things to talk about. And I would just keep telling stories. Nothing new under the sun, meaning, but I would keep telling stories. Or I'd walk around my house. I'd show her my flowers. Because she loved flowers. That was another joy that Grammy and I shared was flowers. So if you missed it on Friday, I did post a couple of my newest flowers, my flowers that are just now blooming. In fact, I'll retweet it here for you, A-Law Radio. And I was thinking about how much I wished I could share those flowers with Grammy Helen. Because we did love bright colors. I think I got it from her. I wore bright colors to church on Sunday in her honor and some of her jewelry that I got from my uncle after she passed away. I still miss her every single day. And when I see the flowers, I know how much she loved them. And so that makes me love them even more. On Saturday, I went east on Long Island. I just kept driving and driving and driving and driving until I got to the end of Long Island. For those of you who who know the area or you don't, Fire Island is out toward the end of Long Island, so on the eastern end. And I have a friend who lives out there. And she enjoys being on the water as much as I do. So we had two activities planned. Number one, we went kayaking for about 4 hours. We were in kayaks. We kayaked a river out to the bay and then back. It was a beautiful day. The water was calm. And you know how much I love my cloud pictures. And so I was able to take a bunch of photos while I was kayaking of the clouds and the blue sky reflected in the water. Really, really special. And one of the reasons why I enjoyed doing that on what was the 1 year anniversary since Grammy passed away is because Graham loved my photos. She loved it. Every time I visited her, and a couple times during the year, I would share photos with her. So either in person, on my own laptop, or I would send them to my Uncle Tom, who visited her once a week, and he would share the photos. And then I could talk to her about them when we were on the phone. She loved my photos. She loved nature. She loved being outside. She loved taking walks. So to spend time with my friend and be out in nature on Saturday, I knew that she would appreciate that. Lots of birds we saw, lots of fish. I would always tell her about my hiking adventures or my outdoor adventures because she loved to hear about the animals. And then on Saturday evening, now this actually wasn't, it didn't dawn on me. It wasn't originally planned the way that I later viewed it. And you'll understand in a second. So again, my friend lives out east on Long Island, lots of beaches in the area. And it was a nice, calm night, good breeze. She asked me if I wanted to go see the beach. She said, I want to give you the Long Island experience. Do you want to go see the beach? What did I say it was, Producer Jay? Smith Point Beach?
Right.
For those of you who want to look it up. But it's out there on Fire Island. And we drove out, and there were so many people still at the beach. It was such a nice evening. People are cooking out. They were still swimming. The water was really warm after some of the extreme heat we've had. The water was really warm. And so we decided we would go out down to the water and stand in the surf. Tide was coming in. We got splashed a bunch as we were taking photos. The sunset, wasn't expecting much because it was pretty cloudy when we got out of her car. But pockets of blue sky opened up. And then the sun began to set, and it was purple, and it was pink, and it was orange. And I took a bunch of photos. Again, photos that I would have shared with Grammy. But what dawned on me as we were leaving, after she passed away in 22, in early July of 22, I took a couple nights off from the show. I didn't really know what to do with myself. None of my family is in the area, so I couldn't hug my family. I did see some friends on Sunday at church the day after she passed away, the 2 days after she passed away. And they hugged me and cried with me. But for the most part, I felt really isolated because I didn't have any family that I could commiserate with, people who knew her. My brother was 4 hours away. My mom's in Houston. It was a really tough weekend and a really tough couple weeks without seeing any family. And what I did 2 days after she passed away was go to the beach. Not because I wanted to have your typical beach day and because I wanted to hang out and get some sun. No, because that's the only place I felt like I could find any type of peace. I always feel peace at the ocean and joy. Now, I didn't feel joy on the day that I went last summer, but it was really the only thing I could think of to do where I could just sit and think about Grammy and listen to music and stare at the water and find some peace, which I did in the midst of my grief and my pain over losing her. I did find peace, and I just sat there all day, except for the few times that I would go and stand in the water and do that instead. Sure, took a few photos, but for the most part, just existed next to the ocean. And it was what I needed. And a few weeks later, I went back with a friend and she made me get in the water. She made me swim. And for the first time in weeks, I laughed and I felt actual joy. So the beach was part of my healing process. And it dawned on me as I was leaving the beach on Saturday evening, this was perfect. It was part of my healing process a year ago. And I can feel the healing and the joy and the peace now, even as much as I still miss Grammy every single day. You all are so kind. I did post on Friday about how much I was missing her, and many of you wrote back. And you told me how much you missed the stories of Grammy Helen. And I know she was a superstar here, which is why I tell you these things, because you all loved her. And you loved to hear the stories about her, especially the last couple of years when she was getting close to 100 and missing her during the pandemic. And she learned how to Skype and she did yoga for the first time. She took an art class. I know that you all came to have a great affection for her too. So I appreciate that. You always respond when I post. Yeah, it's been a long time. It's been way too long. But thank you for caring about her. Thank you for all of the posts that you sent me back on Friday. And I will share some of the photos from the kayaking trip, which was awesome. And then the hour on the beach in which we got splashed with water, covered with sand, even though we actually didn't go swimming. Yep, it was perfect. Good morning to you if you're waking up on your Monday. Ouch. We're asking you, who are the MVP candidates at this point of the Major League Baseball season? Some of your answers already coming in. So on Twitter, A-Law Radio, our Facebook page too, we got to hear Ken Griffey Jr. on Sunday at Lumen Field as the MLB draft was taking place. And for those of you who were following the College World Series, a familiar name who was picked number one overall. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
To officially announce tonight's number one pick.
With the first pick of the 2023 MLB draft, the Pittsburgh Pirates pick Paul Skenes, right-handed pitcher from LSU. Washington, you have the next pick.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That voice, for those of you who can't hear it or recognize it over the din in Seattle, is Paul. I just ruined that. We just start that over again. I just have to start over again. Could you just erase that from the memory banks? There goes the perfect show. I was all excited. I jumped the gun on the first pick and skipped the Hall of Famer and the legend. Dope! Okay, we can do this. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. That voice, in case you couldn't recognize it or understand it over the din, Seattle legend Ken Griffey Jr. It's actually really good to hear him and see him. Probably going to be one of my favorite aspects of the All-Star festivities being in Seattle is that he is an ambassador and certainly the de facto host for the All-Stars themselves, but for the show. It's a circus that comes to town for the Home Run Derby and then the All-Star Game, too. And Ken Griffey Jr. on MLB Network announces the number one overall pick. Now is the point at which we can unveil him. But if you followed either the College World Series in Omaha, or you listened to us cover the College World Series, won by the LSU Tigers, you know, 6'6", 240-pound ace, Paul Skenes of the Tigers, was going to go very high in the draft, if not number one. He did end up getting selected first by the Pirates and expresses his excitement on WTAE in Pittsburgh.
I don't know what I was expecting, you know, coming into the day, but means a lot to be the first overall pick, and I'm just looking forward to, you know, what's to come with playing baseball and, you know, hopefully winning a World Series or two in Pittsburgh.
Ooh, I like the sound of that, winning a World Series or two in Pittsburgh. I would be all about the black and gold fresh blood because I do love the new storylines. We got a couple of them this year in the NBA and in the NHL with the Golden Knights and the Denver Nuggets winning the first ever titles in franchise history. Could you imagine? I feel the same way about the Pirates that I would about the Buffalo Bills. It's been so long, and not only have the fan bases for those two respective clubs dealt with major disappointment, dejection, discouragement, the questions about would their franchises ever be relevant again, but also stretches where they felt like their teams were back, only to be let down. It almost hurts more than when you have hope, when your hopes are dashed. If you have no hope and no expectations, it doesn't hurt as much. Except, as sports fans, we have a really hard time actually containing expectations because hope springs eternal. Well, Pittsburgh Pirates fans, Paul Skeens, let's hope he doesn't just play out his rookie deal and then leave, which has been happening with the Pirates. But instead, they keep him around and he's the start of something special. He certainly was part of something special for LSU baseball. And his coach, Jay Johnson, had a special message on social because he represents Tiger Nation.
Paul, congratulations on being drafted. I'm so proud of you. I have never seen a player impact a program more than you have the LSU baseball program during the year that you were here. You were by far the best pitcher in college baseball this year and frankly had the best season of any pitcher that I've ever seen. And that would have been enough. But on top of that, you're an elite person, elite character, and you transformed our team into making it one of the most special teams in college baseball history based on the person that you are, the character that you have, and the leader that you are. So I just wanted to say thank you, and I love you. Great job.
Jay Johnson on LSU baseball's Twitter. If you haven't seen the video of Paul, he's got his family around and special people in his life and also sporting one of those mustaches that is all the rage these days with college and pro athletes. So good for him. A lot of joy there. Congratulations. And yes, cool to see Ken Griffey Jr., who is a Hall of Famer and couldn't have played long enough, in my opinion. I would have watched him play for years longer, and he dealt with injuries, of course, and a lot of people would point to how he sacrificed his body, who'd go out and try to make every play in the outfield. He loved to dive after baseballs. He loved to make defensive plays. He loved to roam the outfield, if you will. He would go full tilt right into a wall. And then, of course, that sweet swing. It'll be fun. Was it a couple of years ago? When did we see him and his dad playing catch at the All-Star game? Was that 2 years ago? I can't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago.
Was that the All-Star game? I do remember that happening.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And part of it, I think, not only are they ambassadors, a father-son team, they're ambassadors for baseball, but you know they're also big into getting prostate cancer checks, getting routine checkups. Go ahead. I can see it on your face.
I remember that. It was at the Field of Dreams. That's what I thought.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. So it wasn't the All-Star break, though that would have been fitting as well. You're right. It was the Field of Dreams game, and they walked out of the cornfield.
Corn. Yeah.
Oh, my
cool
gosh. Yes. I just remember getting chills and being so happy, feeling like I was about 20 years younger watching Ken Griffey Jr. Amazing. I still miss him. He's one of those baseball players that I could have watched every night that I really enjoyed.
One of my favorite sports stories of all time is, I think, early 90s, whenever they played together on the Mariners, and Ken Griffey Jr. He doesn't call off his dad in the outfield for a ball, and Ken Griffey Sr. goes, I got to go home and ground him because he stole the ball from him in the field.
Oh, that's awesome. And they have such a good relationship. And yeah, they both are committed to this health initiative. You'll see them do commercials a bunch where they're encouraging routine checkups for prostate health and prostate cancer. Just am really glad that they're still around baseball, that they are ambassadors, because they're an iconic baseball family, and what they've meant to the game can't be overstated. Can't be overstated. So close. Anyway, it's good to see him. Good to hear from him on MLB Network. And then for the Pirates, congratulations on drafting Paul Skeens. Let's see if it makes a difference in their path moving forward. All right, coming up, Wimbledon entering week number 2. We've got a first-time American into the quarterfinals on the women's side. And we're going to have to wait a little longer for Novak Djokovic and whether or not he advances to the quarters, though he is up 2-0 when they were interrupted by curfew in Wimbledon. It was supposed to be, or I guess not supposed to be, it could have been a swan song for Andy Murray, and he is really disappointed about how his Wimbledon run ended as a Brit. And then while we're talking golf slash tennis, two of the sports that I really enjoy covering this time of the year with the majors. First time at the U.S. Women's Open that an American survives since 2016. Awesome story to get to know the name Allison Corpus. I hope we hear and see of her or hear more of her and see her again. She's really got a contagious smile and, man, a personality that prepared her for this first ever win at a major. First ever win overall. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
It's always been the most important tournament for me in the year. So, you know, regardless of how I was feeling coming in, I would always, you know, do my best to, you know, be ready for this one, even if there was some other physical issues, niggles and what have you, that, you know, I'd always, yeah, give my best. But yeah, you do feel like, obviously, as you get towards the latter stage of your career, that you want to make the most of these opportunities because, yeah, you don't know how many more times I'll be here.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That is the voice of Andy Murray, who is not trying to hide his disappointment at all over his time at Wimbledon coming to an end. And he's not the only one who is expressing disappointment. If you're watching Wimbledon over the weekend, you know that the 10th-seeded American, Francis Tiafoe, also fell, and this in straight sets, to Grigor Dimitrov. And Francis was arriving at Wimbledon on this great high because he had just won a grass court title in preparation for Wimbledon last month, but didn't have the experience and really didn't put up much of a fight. So yeah, plenty of misery to go around. You know, misery loves company. TFO called it awful. It was awful. There will be more opportunities. He's got great energy, a lot of skill, and still learning. Still learning on the job, if you will. Also on Sunday, Novak Djokovic had his match suspended after two sets against a Polish contender. They were on center court, but because of the curfew at Wimbledon, they had to shut it down because their local rules there in the area don't allow matches to go past 11 o'clock at night. And so, yeah, we've seen this a couple times where the curfew has interrupted a match, but they will pick up again on Monday. But back to Andy Murray. This was potentially going to be his swan song. And even if it was a pie in the sky, a pipe dream, the fact that he may have played his final Wimbledon singles match is weighing heavy on him. If you didn't see it, it was Friday, a five-set classic against Stefanos Tsitsipas. And this is another one that was suspended because of the local curfew. Murray actually had the 2-1 lead, but couldn't get over the hump. And so now he's dealing with a painful defeat as you consider what might have been. And that's the part that I know is hard for me too, right? What might have been? If I had done this differently or this differently, what might have happened? He's certainly a favorite there as a Brit and is brought them great joy. But yeah, dealing with the disappointment and needing time to get over it.
I don't know, to be honest. I'm obviously very disappointed just now. Yeah, obviously, you never know how many opportunities you're going to get to play here. So, yeah, the defeats maybe, yeah, feel a bit tougher. But to be honest, every year that Wimbledon's not gone how I'd like, it's been hard.
He's a three-time Grand Slam champion, but this always his favorite. This always the one that has mattered most to him for obvious reasons. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. When you know you're toward the end of your career now, he hasn't decided on retirement yet, but you know when you're at the end of your career, the missed opportunities tend to weigh on you even more. And so to bow out early in tournaments maybe would lead him to think that he's closer to retirement, but sometimes there's motivation of, hey, if I can just give it one more shot, just give it one more shot. Jessica Pegula ends up in the quarterfinals for the first time at Wimbledon. She's an American, and you know the name because she is the daughter of the Buffalo Bills owners. She's playing healthy now and with a lot of joy as she continues to get better and better.
It's one of those things where if I stop playing, I find myself missing it. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that it's individual. I love that it's so hard and it's so challenging, I think, on like the individual person. And to me, like being able to push through like matches or practices or times or injuries or whatever it is, it's so rewarding. And I just love that. I just love that part about it. So I think, I love playing. I'm passionate about it. I like practicing. It's just one of those things where I enjoy it.
She is into the quarterfinals at the All England Club for the first time. And certainly a name that people know here, sports fans know, but also she's an American. So a lot to be excited about there. Fifth American woman, only the fifth American woman in the past quarter century to get to the quarterfinals at all four majors. So there's been a void post Serena Williams, post Venus Williams of American women. And we know on the men's side too, there's a lot of really good young talent. But who can break through and be a slam winner, maybe challenge for number one overall, or at least get into that top five and stick in the world rankings? John Isner was in the top 10 for a while. He's dealt with a ton of injuries. Who's next? We've seen the flashes of Coco Gauff, certainly Naomi Osaka, Jessie Pegula, Sloane Stephens. Can Jessie be the one who gets up into that top five and remains there? Maybe the heir apparent in American tennis to Serena Williams, though nobody can fill her shoes. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. Speaking of Americans on top, really cool story. I know a lot of the headlines around the American contingent at the U.S. Women's Open, which was taking place at Pebble Beach, were about Michelle Wee West now, who was making this her swan song and retiring from tennis. And she's from Honolulu. Well, how about another Honolulu native, Allison Corpus, who wins not just the U.S. Women's Open for her first major, but her first LPGA title overall.
My mind's racing. I mean, like I said yesterday, like this is really a dream come true. And it was something I dreamed of, but at the same time, kind of just never really expected to happen. So just trying to take it in and enjoy the moment.
On what is an iconic course, she's just 25 years old, maybe doesn't even realize the history of the course where she's playing. But how about this? Much more like a U.S. Open than what the men's course turned out to be in terms of its difficulty and the scoring. You know, the USGA wants their opens to be challenging. They don't want to see dozens of golfers in red numbers come Sunday in the leaderboard. Well, the Women's Open at Pebble Beach followed that pattern. She was the only golfer of more than 150 to be under par all 4 days of the tournament. So consistency, steady Eddie. She tried not to look at what was happening all around her as she was wrapping up on Sunday.
I didn't look at the leaderboard much. I mean, I got off to a pretty good start, and I kind of figured, you know, just keep my head down, keep playing my game. Accidentally saw a leaderboard, I think, on 14 or 15. But just tried to stick to the same game plan and just told Jay, you know, like, let's try to make a few birdies coming in, and let's just bring it home.
How about that? First ever victory on the tour at 25 years old. Also joining Michelle Wee West as the only major champions from the state of Hawaii. And she actually was asked about the influence of West. And she said, well, she's been a huge role model, but I never compared myself to her. I never really thought I'd get this far. So how did she? How did she manage the nerves of being in that position for the first time?
As far as this week goes, just, yeah, the nerves and just kind of really telling myself, like, I belong out here. I'm good enough to compete. That's just been what I've been telling myself for the past 2 years. I think getting my tour card, you know, that's just kind of the beginning of the journey, and you never really know what's going to happen. So just really been working really hard the last few years. I mean, college, I think, was tough, just having to, you know, balance the schedule, both practice and school. And I think that prepared me really well.
Though it was a bit of a rocky start for her, she actually began Sunday with a one-stroke deficit, so had one stroke to make up. She had two bogeys but three birdies on the front nine, and so was tied at the midway point, but then much calmer, much smoother, much steadier on the back, and she won three clear of the field. Congratulations to Allison Corpus. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.